Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Fulton Lewis, Jr., speaking from the studios of radio station WOL in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. While the little matter of taxes appears to be the top news of interest here in Washington tonight, you know, of course, that a new and staggering tax program, about $6.25 billion worth, in addition to the taxes you now already are paying, was passed by the House of Representatives several weeks ago at the call of the President. That was nearly $2 billion less than the amount the President and the Treasury Department had asked for, but that was the best the House of Representatives was willing to do. Ever since that time, it's been under study by the Senate Finance Committee, the senators on that committee trying to find some additional means of taxation that would produce the extra $2 billion that the President wants. There was, of course, the inevitable proposal for a sales tax. That will be a proposal as long as tax bills continue, you may be sure. Then last week, the Secretary of the Treasury, Mr. Morgenthau, who is opposed to the sales tax, he says, proposed what he calls a spending tax on the individual. The idea of that spending tax is that instead of adding a tax on the price of the things you buy, the government adds a tax on the amount that you spend when you buy it. In other words, if you were to buy a pair of shoes for $2 instead of charging a sales tax of 5%, which would make the price of the shoes $2.10, the government, in a spending tax, would tax you 10 cents on the $2 that you spend, which still comes to $2.10 for the pair of shoes. Now, you may be a little bit bewildered by that. You may wonder what the difference is. Well, that's the very funny part of it. There isn't any difference. Mr. Morgenthau's proposal, in detail, does allow each individual citizen an exemption, $600 a year for single people, and I believe it was $1,500 a year for married couples, and they would have to pay the tax on only what they spend above those amounts. His theory is that the principal objection to a sales tax is that the tax falls even on those people in the very lowest income tax brackets, people who spend what little money they do have for the barest necessities of life. And in this way, his argument is that those bare necessities of life would not be taxed, all of which is true. But the sales tax supporters propose to do the same thing by exempting such items as bread and medicines and milk and basic food products from the sales tax. On the other hand, Mr. Morgenthau's tax would be paid all in one lump sum at the end of the year, along with the individual income tax, while the sales tax is somewhat less painful in that it comes along a penny or so at a time. But the Senate Finance Committee didn't like Mr. Morgenthau's proposal today. Very enthusiastically, the Senate Finance Committee did not like it. The vote was just 12 to nothing against his spending tax, which seems to settle that once and for all. Then the committee got around to the question of a sales tax, 5%. And on that, the vote in the committee was a tie, which was not enough to put it over. The gist of the attitude of the committee seems to be that the gentlemen are not sure that they ought to have a sales tax at all, but if there is to be a sales tax, it ought to be called a sales tax, honestly and straightforwardly, and not dressed up in some other fancy hoax name. Finally, they came to a new proposal by the chairman of the Finance Committee, Senator Walter George of Georgia. He calls it a victory tax, which is a very colorful, patriotic name, but entirely undescriptive. The idea, however, sounds complicated, though it's very simple. It is just this: that every payday, your employer will hold 5% of your salary out of your pay envelope, and he'll turn it over to the United States Treasury instead. At the end of the year, the Treasury will return part of that money that has been turned over to it by your employer, return part of it to you as a refund. 25% of the total that it has received if you're a single person, 40% if you're a married person, and on top of the 40%, an additional 2% for each child or dependent. For example, if you're married and have 5 children, you're entitled to a refund of 50% of what has been taken out of your pay envelope. However, you can only get that refund after you have paid your income tax for the year. If you haven't paid your income tax, you have to apply your refund on that payment. Now, that may seem unduly complicated, but the reason is just this. Senator George feels that this tax ought not to be as heavy against married people with families as it is against single people. And yet, the employer who makes out the pay envelopes. Can't be expected to take 5% of the pay out of one envelope and only 2.5% out of the next one and maybe 3.25% out of the next one. So they have the employer take a full 5% out of each one, and then the government returns part of it according to what classification the individual is in. In the meantime, that additional money which the government has on credit, the additional money that it's collecting from each individual, is a guarantee that the government will get at least part of the income tax that is due to it next March the 15th. The only way the individual can get his refund is to file an income tax return, and that eliminates any possibility of anyone failing to file an income tax return and thereby avoiding the income tax. Furthermore, it cures part of the difficulty that always shows up. The taxpayer, when tax day comes, has spent all of his money while he was making it. He never realized how heavy the income tax would be on March 15th, so the government gets nothing. You can't squeeze blood out of a turnip. This way, Uncle Sam takes part of your income as you make it. And if he takes more than you need to pay your income tax when the time comes next March 15th, he's glad to give that much of it back to you in cash. But at least you haven't spent it all, and he gets his, whatever that may be. And for want of something better, the Finance Committee of the Senate approved that victory tax this afternoon, tentatively, by a vote of 12-6. You may not like it, but, would you like the sales tax any better, or Mr. Morgenthau's spending tax? The special committee which President Roosevelt appointed, headed by Mr. Bernard M. Baruch, to study the synthetic rubber situation, is about to make its official final report to the nation. I was told today by very reliable sources that the report probably will be turned over to the president within the next day or so, and the presumption is that the president will make it public immediately. I don't know what that report is going to say, but just as a warning to you, don't let your hopes run away with you. Don't be expecting any panacea or cure-all that will produce tires for joyriding or unlimited civilian pleasure travel, because no matter what happens, that is not in the cards definitely. The problem is how to get enough rubber to keep the necessary fighting equipment of the nation in operation and necessary automobiles in operation here at home for essential civilian activities and war production. The great tragedy of this whole rubber situation, frankly, is that this Baruch committee, which I am confident will do an excellent job in its report, came into existence so late in this rubber crisis. Last May or June, a tremendous saving in time and materials and a tremendous contribution to the rubber production could have been achieved if government officials had been willing to reorganize their plans at that time. The alcohol process for making rubber takes 10 months to get in operation. That means that if the government officials in charge had switched to that alcohol method in June, they could have had the synthetic rubber actually coming out of the plants by the end of next March. The petroleum process plants, which they insisted upon sticking to willy-nilly, are scheduled to come into production next July, mostly in August. And the rubber that would have been made between March and August would have been a tremendous contribution toward keeping the American people on wheels. Unfortunately, however, this is not last May or last June. We've backed and filled and bickered and whined about while the alcohol rubber plants should have been getting underway. That is not Mr. Baruch's fault, nor the fault of his committee. And it now, whether we like it, is September. It will be the end of September before actual construction could begin on any of these alcohol rubber plants. And if the change is made now, the best we could hope for would be for them to begin turning out synthetic rubber by about the 1st of August of next year. The advantage of time has been frittered away by little men in charge of this program who couldn't bear to admit to you that they could be anything but 100% right in their original decisions. So unless the Baruch Committee has found some new angle, there's very little chance that any time could be saved now by shifting to the alcohol process. The time that could have been saved has been thrown away. And now, in the meantime, the Office of Defense Transportation announced just a few moments ago that it's going to start rationing the use of all commercial vehicles in the United States on November the 15th. This is part of that same plan I told you about months ago, the one that stirred up all the talk about nationwide gasoline rationing. The only difference is that this order tonight applies only to commercial vehicles such as trucks and buses and taxicabs. It does not affect any private automobile. To tomorrow, you probably will hear it called Nationwide Gasoline Rationing for Commercial Users. It is not that. It has nothing to do with the supplies of gasoline anywhere in the country, and it's being put into effect only to make those commercial vehicles last as long as possible on their tires. They're not making any more buses or trucks or taxi cabs or civilian tires, so the ones that are now in use are going to have to last. The program was drawn up by Mr. Joe Eastman, the Director of Defense Transportation, whose job it is to see that there are enough automobiles and trucks to carry the United States through this war. What this all means to the bus or truck operator is that he will have to apply to the Office of Defense Transportation here in Washington for what is called use certificates. These certificates will entitle each commercial automobile to only enough gasoline, tires, and parts to do its essential jobs, and those jobs will have to be done in the most efficient way. There cannot be any waste mileage whatsoever. Once again today, the war news is very thin. There's a bit of uneasiness in high Army and Navy circles about the reports from New Guinea that the Japs have broken through the outer defenses and a march toward Port Moresby, but it really is nothing more than just that, a bit of uneasiness. There's a new order of things there in the South Pacific compared with the days when the Japs first came in there. The United Nations no longer present just a scattered, hopelessly outnumbered, purely equipped skeleton of an army. Today, it's exactly the opposite. As far as those American bombing raids on German military objectives in France are concerned, well, they're going to keep right on. The State Department told the Vichy government exactly that today. Mr. Laval and the other German-dominated figures in the Vichy government have been very indignant, you know, over those bombing raids on French soil, even though the Germans are using that French soil in their operations against the United Nations. Yesterday he protested. Today we told him officially that they will keep right on. And that's the top of the news as it looks from here, ladies and gentlemen. Until tomorrow evening, good night.
Jr. returns tomorrow evening at this same hour with the top of the news from the nation's capital. These broadcasts originate in the studios of WOL in Washington. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.